Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
One day I'm going to write a cookbook, but I do. I've started to actually write my recipes because the kids, my husband will always say, why don't you write down your recipes?
Yeah.
And I've realized I probably should start doing that. The family joke is that if somebody asks me for the recipe, I'll just say, well, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
Election merch available at StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10. Get 10% off your entire order. Even if you order from other shows, you still get that 10% off. Just use that code STU10. Check us out on YouTube as well, YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We've got this show, comedy skits, we got the live news reaction, and so much more. Just subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and you'll know when we go live after big election events, which we've done a lot of times already this year. Kyle Mann from the Babylon Bee is going to be here to talk about their new movie, January 6th, The Most Deadliest Day. Kamala Harris invades my personal space by planning a rally in Texas. I'll tell you how that makes me feel. But we're just going to start by doing woke backlash. And I want to, this is like a big campaign theme. We can talk about woke backlash, generally speaking, when it comes to societal measures and cultural measures as well. But I really want to tie this directly to the campaign and what it means for 2024. Let me start with this. Gretchen Whitmer's social media guru is exactly who you think, says Hot Air. And this all stems from this video, bizarre video of Gretchen Whitmer seemingly giving communion with a Dorito to some weird social media influencer in something that I guess you had to be there to really appreciate. But here's the video. The best part about that, this weird sexual overtones and like combining that with communion and the whole thing is very, very strange. And then she just looks so awkward at the camera. Like, yeah, that shot is so good. She's just like, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Is this good? Is this good? Is this good, fellow youngsters? I don't understand what I'm doing right now. Now, remember, J.D. Vance is supposed to be the weird one. But here's Gretchen Whitmer doing that in that way with her. Very, very odd. Very, very odd, to say the least. And of course, you know, the backstory of this is kind of what you'd expect. As we mentioned, the social media guru is one of those things that is now, I guess, with every campaign. Everyone's got a social media guru. But this, of course, social media guru is someone who's a big TikTok person. This gets to Gretchen Whitmer, who has been leaning heavily toward building a TikTok personality to appeal to Gen Z. Now, you think about this from Whitmer's perspective, and this isn't a Whitmer story, but just to hit this quickly, look, she wants to be president of the United States, okay? She really wanted to be VP. She couldn't get that done. They didn't want to put two women on the ticket because as woke as they are, they don't believe you're woke enough to handle that. So they didn't put her on the ticket. They instead picked a mentally challenged man from Minnesota. I don't know who they picked. I don't even understand it to this day. But they picked somebody from Minnesota instead. So you got, she's thinking, okay, well, Kamala might lose here 2024. I'm going to need somebody in 2028. That should be me. Now, she has a terrible record and should not even be considered to be governor of the state, let alone president of the United States. But she's trying to build that audience now. She's putting in her work, right? And like, you can kind of see how this would happen, right? You know, someone comes in, they're 20 years younger than you. They say they understand this. You don't. There's this bit, you look at the followers. Oh, 7.9 million followers. I got to do this, I guess. And you kind of see how something like this could happen. The person who's putting all this stuff together is Julia Pickett. She is a queer influencer. And of course, the perfect person to help you gain fame on TikTok. If Gretchen Whitmer wants to be a TikTok star, it makes sense to trust her, says Hutter. The only problem with that, TikTok is and is meant to be a rejection of ordinary life. It is an escape from a mundane world in which people have families, go to church, and deal with challenges and opportunities as adults. It is not, in other words, a world where you want a governor or president of the United States to shine. This has been kind of a situation that has, it's not just Gretchen Whitmer who's getting into this. It's interesting, it's kind of the whole Democratic Party. Like, they've really wagered the future of their party in this election on TikTok. And we see these things, these little things they do over and over again, and they seem so strange and out of place to most Americans, but they're right in the pocket of the people who are basically running the communications department of the White House at this point. Here's the time where Queer Eye came to visit to the White House. I've got several comments on that video. Many of them I'm just going to keep on the internal monologue today. But if you missed it, if you happen to be listening on podcast, basically, dude with a beard came in and in an interaction that I believe you're going to be shocked to hear was staged, just like the McDonald's stunt. They staged it. That wasn't a. How did they get the camera inside if they were just showing up at the White House front door? I ask you that question. It was staged the entire time. Now, you might think to yourself, why? Why would they do that? Here's a campaign that's done everything it can to run away policy-wise from every liberal position Kamala Harris has ever held, which is all the positions. She's run away as far as possible, but then she's meeting people at the guys in dresses with beards at the door. And, you know, okay, all right, fine. And then you have this. This is a this is from White House Intern Day. Just enjoy.
One sec. Democracy's calling. See you, Daddy. Bye.
Hi, my name is Cooper, and this is a day in my life as a White House intern.
We did a joke. Hey, everyone. Vogue.
Usually, I start off with a big coffee. Sorry, they're like really strict in here.
Hey, Jenny, I booked you a nail appointment, love.
Yeah, I didn't tell you to do that.
It's called initiative.
Hi, White House, this is Cooper. I don't think so. Oh, doesn't matter.
This is actually the entrance to the West Wing. This is so fun, and it's really prestigious.
Hey, POTUS.
Is Olivia Rodrigo still here?
No. We've come a long way in our fight against this virus. We've vaccinated 160 million Americans. Are you getting this all down?
Don't worry, Queen. It's all right here.
Cooper.
Sorry, Miss Jen.
And Jen, don't forget to have fun.
Spirit fingers, Mama.
We need to get shots in the arms of every single American.
I'm heading to a haircut.
Comment if you want me to make more of these.
Now, that video comes from a couple of years ago. You can notice by the appearance of the seemingly competent in retrospect, Jen Psaki. But this is the sort of thing that they want to embrace, right? Like, they think makes them kind of cool. It makes them kind of with it. They makes it kind of relatable to the youngsters out there. And it's fascinating to think that this is their plan, right? This is their communication plan. Now, they really did embrace that. They've tried to walk away from that in the years since. But part of this is, you know, you kind of wonder why they go down this road when we're having this kind of big conversion in the United States. In the United States that looked at the and kind of took up the mantle of this woke revolution for a while and has now really started to reject it. The Economist has a piece, America is becoming less woke. Our statistical analysis finds that woke opinions and practices are on the decline. And it's true. I think it's something that we've all sort of felt over the past couple of years. You know, there was that crazy point where everyone seemed to have a DEI person in their company and everything was woke all the time. And it does seem to have died down a little bit. Now, it seems like to me, at least my feeling is, it was right after the George Floyd thing, right? The George Floyd thing happens. Everyone's afraid to say anything critical about anyone who isn't a white male. And, you know, it kind of like we go into that woke world and then people kind of, you know, the the emotion of that time wears off. I mean, you might be upset about a death that should not have occurred, but that doesn't mean you change your entire governing philosophy because of it. That doesn't make any sense. That's emotions running your life. It's not reality. It's not a sober judgment of policy. It is the exact opposite of that. So we have now seen, and you can kind of statistically measure a little bit how this works. We'll go to a little Chartapalooza episode. I'll make sure to describe all of this for your podcast listeners as well. Is race the most important issue in the United States? Well, you see, before, let's say, 2014 or so, pretty much nobody believes race is the most important issue in the United States. I mean, it had really flatlined for a decade or so. I mean, Barack Obama was brought in as this like post-racial president, but really that period had already been going on for a long time, even when George W. Bush was in there and probably before that. But it starts to raise up towards the end of Barack Obama's presidency, and rises a little bit through the Trump presidency, coming back down at the end of COVID, and then or the beginning of COVID, and then George Floyd is murdered, and it goes super, super high to the highest peak of importance of multiple decades of our history that people think race is the most important. But as you see, after the George Floyd situation fades from the news a little bit, we see a reduction, not quite back to the norms of the George W. Bush period, that racial harmony that we had during George W. Bush's presidency. In comparison, it actually was, but back to much lower levels. Now, what about racial differences in outcomes are mainly due to discrimination? Is that true or not? Well, we see a percentage, about 30%, that goes on from beginning or the end of Al Gore and Bill Clinton's reign in office all the way through again about 2014, and things start to rise right around then. You see Donald Trump takes over, that gets a little higher, but in recent days has begun to just a little bit. You can see the peak there. I don't know, it's not a trend quite yet, but you can see the reversal of the increase. That's not all. What about social science papers? Well, you see a very similar pattern. Do people use woke terms in social science patterns papers? Well, almost nobody did back in 2000, and it's risen slowly but steadily. A very steep rise from about 2015 to the George Floyd murders. But then again, you see a pretty clear peak there. It looks like it's coming down once again. Now, another thing that happens when you go woke is you have to start censoring people who won't go woke with you. Right? You can't just let people say things that they believe. They have to believe what you believe. And if they aren't saying the woke things that you believe, they need to be silenced. This is true even with academics. There's been lots of attempts to silence academics and their opinions. Of course, you see none of this from 2000 all the way till around 2012, 2013, in that period, starts to slowly rise and peaks right after the George Floyd murder, but has fallen off by probably just eyeballing here 60, 70%. From its peaks, that's a good thing. Again, America is becoming maybe a little bit less woke. And then we have, of course, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. The D, the E, and the I. And I'm glad once I started that, I actually remembered them, because there was a moment there I was wondering if I was going to. You look at DEI on earnings calls for companies. It was completely non-existent from 2000 to about 2010. And then it bubbles on this little tiny little itty bitty bit all the way up to the George Floyd murders, and then skyrockets through the roof through the George Floyd murder situation, but then comes back down by probably 85% all the way down to what the level it's at today, and seemingly continuing to decrease. All of that kind of gets you to a point where you think, all right, is the Democratic Party right now just really out of step with what America is doing? Because, if you think back to the Floyd period, we're all at home at that period. I mean, June of 2020. It's really kind of still in the mostly locked down situation. Even in a lot of red states, it really wasn't open yet. I remember at the beginning of May, restaurants opened up here at 25% capacity. That's not normal life. A lot of people are still at home, scared of the virus. They're at home. The George Floyd thing happens. They all watch it on TV. They post their things on Instagram, penance for whatever part they had in the George Floyd murder, which, by the way, they should know, unless they happen to be a couple of police officers, no part in it. not responsible for people who look like you and their crimes. The skin tone of another person does not equal your guilt in a particular crime. That's not how things work, at least in this country, up until this point. But it's a situation where you get to go down these roads and people really embrace that for a while. And then, you know, what is normal happens, which is people kind of like let their brains re-enter the whole situation, right? Like we could show you over and over. And conservatives are famous for not letting their emotions get in the way in these moments. Not always a good thing as far as public relations goes, okay? I know this show was on here days after the George Floyd murder, saying, look, what happened with George Floyd, we can judge that as an individual incident and judge these officers as individual officers. But when we look at the big picture, what we see is these events almost never occur. They are incredibly rare events that happen incredibly rarely. We see the same thing with school shootings. You know, I've mentioned this stat many, many times. It was one that was crazy enough that I had to check it a bunch of times because I didn't even believe it when I first read it. But I, Stu Bergier, was far more likely to die in a school shooting when I went to to high school in the 90s than kids are today. It doesn't seem possible, but it's actually true. Now, they were different types of school shootings. I went to a school, you know, before Columbine happened. They weren't these big spectacle type killings. They were people just getting shot in bad incidents when kids would bring guns to school. And they might shoot their enemy. They might shoot their friends. They weren't necessarily trying to shoot up an entire gym worth of people. But when you have a lot of that gun violence spread over a bunch of cities and towns across the country, the rate is even higher. And you know what? I go back and ask those moms in the 90s if they care if there was a big spectacle around their kid's death. Is it a big deal to you that, you know, they, you know, maybe the killer didn't post a video of them with a GoPro? Does that make any difference to you? Or do you just miss your kid? My guess is they just missed their kid. They didn't want them to die anyway. Obviously, any school shooting is bad, but our reaction after a school shooting is constantly and somewhat understandably filled with emotion, right? We look and we grieve over kids who were lost. We have these emotional reactions. The nation had one after George Floyd. But eventually, sober reality comes back. And all of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute, what did we change about our society? All of a sudden, we think race is the most important thing again? Huh? Wait a minute. Now, you know, Nabisco's going to tell me about what their racial policies are? Huh? Aren't they just going to make crackers? Like, crackers is a racist term, by the way. I'm sorry I used it. We don't want a world like that here in America. The Democrats took that George Floyd, post-George Floyd era, and locked it into their DNA. And now they are the arbiters of all that is woke and all that is right to say. They embrace stuff like radical racial ideology from, you know, CRT and DEI and Ibram Kendi and all the people that you know, all the names that you know. They embrace that. They embraced it hardcore. They acted as if there was no question that was the right way to go. They inserted it into their DNA. They filled their ranks with people who believed this nonsense and they locked it in. And America didn't. They're looking at them saying, like, wait, what? You want a dude spiking a volleyball at my daughter's face? That's where this came? That's what you want? You think that's an okay outcome? No one thinks it's an okay outcome outside of the hardcore left, and that is the Democratic Party today. So now we're seeing a reversal of that. And if you don't believe me, like, think about this ideology crystallized, just injected into the veins of the Democratic Party, and then picture them trying to run a campaign for president of the United States. You get crap like this.
I'm a man.
I'm a man.
I'm a man, man.
And I'm man enough.
I'm man enough to enjoy a barrel-proof bourbon.
Meat.
Man enough to cook my steak rare.
Man enough to deadlift 500 and braid the shit out of my daughter's hair.
You think I'm afraid to rebuild a carburetor? I eat carburetors for breakfast.
I ain't afraid of bears.
That's what bear hugs are for.
I'll tell you another thing I sure as shit am not afraid of. Women.
I'm not afraid of women.
I'm not afraid of women.
They want to control their bodies? I say go for it.
They want to use IVF to start a family? I'm not afraid of families.
They want to be childless cat ladies?
Have all the cats you want.
Woman wants to be president?
Well, I hope she has the guts to look me right in the eye and accept my full-throated endorsement.
Because I'm man enough to support women.
Man enough to know what kind of donuts I like.
Man enough to admit I'm lost, even when I refuse to ask for directions.
Man enough to not ban young women from reading Little Women.
Or one of those pants books that the sisters like.
I'm man enough to raw dog a flight. It sucked. Not worth it.
I'm man enough to be emotional in front of my wife.
In front of my kids.
In front of my horse.
I'm man enough to tell you that I cry at Love Actually.
Good Will Hunting.
West Side Story.
That and Predator.
And I'm sick of so-called men domineering, belittling, and controlling women just so they can feel more powerful.
That's not how my mama raised me.
I love women.
I love women who support their families.
Women who decide not to have families.
Women who take charge.
And I'm man enough to help them win.
I still look at that and I can't believe it's real. It really does feel like it came from the Babylon Bee. You watch that and you realize exactly what's happened with our country and what's happened with the Democratic Party. Why is this failing so bad? They've inserted TikTok, you know, into their campaign. They think that's the way to go. And they're making decisions based on that. They've kind of like turned their messaging over to TikTok because they see big numbers and followers and they're like, oh, well, this'll work. That video is absolutely something made by someone who's never even met a dude before. Like, who would ever think that that's relatable to a guy? I don't know any guy that would think, oh, that's a wonderful commercial. That's going to make me vote for Kamala Harris and Tim's stupid walls. It's just a joke. And it's one of the reasons why they are so vulnerable in this campaign. As I said, this is still a close race somehow. I don't know how. It would be more difficult if they actually were competent, I will say. Luckily, there is a little bit of opportunity out of something like this, even though our country is sort of falling apart in the meantime. The opportunity is to take this, take it on, and do what the Trump campaign is trying to do. Say, hey, we're just going to be like normal people. You know, our candidate goes to McDonald's and works there. It doesn't lie about working at McDonald's. That sort of difference and being able to pull that off is something that has helped Trump and has helped him with this comeback we've been describing over the past few weeks. So we'll go into a little bit more on the election coming up in a couple of minutes. I'm going to talk to Kyle Mann from the Babylon Bee. They've got a new movie out, and he's going to talk to us about it next. I want to tell you about a project that I've been following for years and years. And this has been really an interesting project. It's called Kalshi. And this is the first and only legal prediction market in the United States. You know me, you watch the show. I talk about prediction markets all the time. I'm very fascinated by them. I love them. I've been on Kalshi since the thing launched. Like, I've been on there for a long time. And for a while, they had a bunch of different things that you could predict about normal life, you know, whether you want to look at a contract about a financial measure or weather or, you know, sometimes, you know, entertainment or whatever it was. They had a bunch of really interesting things that you could look at and say, you know, I think this is going to happen and I want to put my money where my mouth is. For years and years and years and years, they worked with the federal government. It was not an easy process. Kalshi got historic regulatory approval from the CFTC that enabled it to offer a new asset called event contracts. This allows traders to take positions on whether a future event will happen or not. Like we know with stocks or commodities, people can now trade any event that has economic or social relevance to them. This is really fun. You know I love this stuff. Now, people use these markets to make money on their opinion or their knowledge, or maybe to just hedge risks that they face. I've been able to use them to offset some financial things, investments that I have. It's really, really a good way of doing that. Now, they have just added the ability to go in and invest on who you think is going to win the election. Who will win the U.S. presidency is one of the contracts. Kalshi gets really accurate forecasts, and we use them. It's, you know, Kalshi is part of what makes up the PulseCast that shows you the exact the thoughts of all the mainstream experts and prediction markets and polling averages. Kalshi's part of that in the background. We monitor what they do because these prediction markets have a way of telling us really important things about what is coming down the line. Now, we've already seen that they can give accurate forecasts for a large range of future events, including economics and, you know, climate change and COVID and politics and tech and AI and science and all that. And now they have these election contracts as well. Kalshi is the first legal and regulated place to trade on the outcome of the real-world U.S. election. You can do it with real money. You can trade with no fees, high liquidity on the election right now. Election markets are currently free. You got a couple weeks to get involved with this. Take advantage of it. It's, you know, even if you want to drop a couple bucks, it's really just fun to do. If you think you really know what's going to happen, might be something very, very profitable for you to do as well. Invest in your opinion about who will win. You can make trades from $1 up to $100 million. You can also earn a variable 4.05% interest on all your cash and positions. Get started with a $20 cash bonus right now. Kalshi will give you Kalshi credit after your first trade. You can join today by going to Kalshi.com/stew. KALSHI.com/stew. It's Kalshi.com/stew. Kalshi.com/stew.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
It's been over 3 years. Our democracy, it died that day. But the Babylon Bee put together a team. A team that would avenge our democracy. To help us never forget to. Remember.
Jewish space laser. Dodge! Phantom Zone!
Quick follow-up question. Why are you evil?
Shame! I love God.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Did Trump supporters break this potted plant?
You just did that.
January 6th, the most deadliest day, streaming exclusively on BabylonBee.com.
I'm now joined by Kyle Mann. He's the editor-in-chief of the Babylon Bee and also writer and director of the Bee's first movie. It's January 6th, the most deadliest day, and it is available to watch right now for Babylon Bee subscribers. Kyle, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. I watched the movie. It's really funny. It's a great look at this particular dark day in our history. What made you decide to actually make it?
I don't know. What makes us decide to do anything at the Babylon Bee? We're goofballs. We have no business plan, and we just tell jokes. And we said, hey, it'd be fun to make a documentary about January 6th. That's really marketable. And we threw it out there, and we wrote it from the perspective of a liberal journalist who's investigating the most deadliest day in human history, and it came together great. It was such a blast to make and film and edit and put out there. And it's been really cool to see all the people that have been subscribing to the Babylon Bee to watch our first movie.
Yeah, it's really well done and very much worth your time and subscription. It's funny though. It's like when you watch it, as you're going through all of this, and a lot of it's built around these just ridiculous exaggerations as to what the day actually was. But like, It's almost not different at all from the clips you play of actual news sources throughout the movie. I mean, you're almost not exaggerating at all.
Yeah, it's funny. We wrote all these jokes for this movie, and yet the funniest stuff in the movie is like things that Kamala Harris actually said about January 6th, or like things that AOC actually said about January 6th. So it's very hard to parody the narrative when they're saying things like, literally in the beginning of the movie, Kamala Harris is saying that this day is seared into our brains in the same way that September 11th is, and in the same way that Pearl Harbor is. Like, what? What on earth? Like, what are you smoking? You know, and so to be able to parody that was difficult, but hopefully we pulled it off in a fun way.
You did. It's funny because I think, I mean, watching the movie, it is in some ways, you know, there's a pair. You could say, like, I think a left-wing journalist would say, I can't believe they're making fun of this terrible day in our history. But what I think you're actually making fun of is just the overreaction to this day. I mean, I don't look back at January 6th and saying that was a great day. I think it was a bad day. I think a lot of bad crap happened that day. But, like, at the end of it, like, we made it through it. It was a few-hour delay. It showed, I think, the strength of our institutions and our system. At the end of the day, I think, you know, you look back at it, and it's not necessarily the day you're making fun of. It's just the absurd places the left and the media went to after it.
Yeah, satire kind of has to have, like, a laser-focused target. You know, you have to be, like, right in on it in order for it to be effective. So you have to be careful, obviously, that you're not accidentally saying what you're not trying to say. And so we were pretty careful in the movie, and we talked to experts, and we had them say, you know, we didn't even have them say anything. We just told them, like, tell us your actual opinion on January 6th. And so, like, getting guys like Dennis Prager that are actually sitting there in this movie saying, it wasn't a great day. I wish it never happened, but it's not the worst day. Like it's not as deadly as any weekend in Chicago, you know? Yeah. Like, that's kind of the point that we're trying to make through satire and comedy is just really laser focusing in on the liberal media's absolute hysteria over January 6th and what it was and what it wasn't. And we're trying to sort that out. So we've gotten some really encouraging feedback from people that are like, I watched your movie and I laughed, but then I was also like, huh, I never actually heard these stories of normal people that were walking through the Capitol building, you know. So it's trying to get that message out there in a fun way that hopefully is accessible to a lot of people.
Yeah, us over at The Blaze, we have Steve Baker, the journalist who was in the Capitol and just taking footage of the situation and has had his own legal situation attached to that. And we've gone through that story a bunch of times. I had not heard the story, though, of the African-American gentleman that you feature in the movie. Can you kind of take us through this? Because, I know you made a comedy movie here, so I mean you're not trying to necessarily. I don't know if you took any rhetorical flourishes here with his story, but like it didn't seem like he did anything at all.
No, and like while I'm being goofy in the movie and I'm calling him a terrorist, and we walk him down the street with a Shane Bell and stuff. Like his story and the footage that we use of him at the Capitol is actually what happened. You know, he was actually just standing in the Capitol doorway for 71 seconds and trying to help the police, because the police are telling them, like, hey, we can't give you a tour today, but we need you to clear the door and we need to try to get some of these people out. And then he's like, he turns around and he's like, come on, guys, like, let's help these guys out. He's trying to get people out of the building. He wasn't there to insurrect anything. Like, he was there just to hear President Trump's speech. And then a bunch of people start walking towards the Capitol. He's like, oh, go check out what's going on over there, you know, and then being treated like a criminal, getting arrested on the tarmac 3 years later, separated from his pregnant wife, his house raided by the FBI. And this guy is an actor and a comedy actor in Babylon Bee videos. So that's one thing that turned us on to this. He's literally the sweetest guy you'll ever meet. And is suddenly being treated like this criminal years later, as though he's been this huge threat to democracy for all these years, and yet the FBI didn't do anything to him until 3 years later. It's crazy.
Yeah, you show basically every single second he's inside the Capitol, which he doesn't go more than three steps inside, and most of the time he's trying to exit. Like, that is legitimately insane. And I think, like, it's an important thing to shine a little bit of light on, you know, on the people who were there that weren't involved in all the bad stuff. Like, I'm never going to sit here and defend, you know, some guy hitting a police officer over the head with a flagpole. It's really, really bad. And there were those people there, and those people, I think, deserved really serious punishments. But, like, on the other side, there was a lot of people, grandmas, as you feature in the movie, people who didn't do much of anything at all, that got swept up in this, and there are really bad consequences. I mean, as you feature in the movie, everything from, you know, problems getting on flights later on, or even losing your PlayStation account.
Yes. And that's, you know, that's the sticking point, and that's what conservatives are upset about, is that anybody that was there that day is being treated just with this kind of blanket prosecution that you are a terrorist and you're an insurrectionist and it's, you know, you're a traitor to the country. and all this stuff when there was people that were literally just walking around. And most people there that day didn't know that there was some, you know, violence going on and some windows being broken and some destruction. And we also make the point in the movie that, you know, most of us wouldn't be upset if BLM protesters were treated in the same way that January 6th protesters were treated. And yet that wasn't the case. You know, literally Kamala Harris bailed out BLM protesters, raised funds to bail out people who were being violent and burning things down, and many more deaths in the BLM riots than there were on January 6th, and much more destruction of property and occupying government buildings for days on end. And those people are just being treated with kid gloves, and most of them got off, most of them didn't get charges. And yet some people that walked around the Capitol taking selfies are, you know, a threat to the country and being treated like total traitors. It's absolutely insane. The double standard is ridiculous. So hopefully we were able to point that out a little bit in a fun way in the movie.
Let me get your sense, Kyle. We're 2 weeks away from the election right now. A big part of the Biden pitch as he was running against Trump was threat to democracy, giant red wall lit up behind him, you know, talking about this constantly. It was a very serious, serious approach. And it seemed like when Kamala got the nomination or was given the nomination, she tried to shift gears on that and tried to come out with the joy sort of thing. And, you know, oh, these guys are weird and all these different sorts of tactics. And as the race is tightened, it seems like they're back to this whole, you know, January 6th threat to democracy sort of pitch against Trump. I mean, is this working on voters?
I don't know. I just write jokes on the internet. But I think, you know, it is really funny to see that, like, this party of joy. And then anytime Trump does anything remotely joyful, like this fun, weird photo op at McDonald's, you know, that... Like, I don't think no matter what you think of Trump, it was fun and it was funny to see Trump in that context. I think that was just hilarious. I'd watch a show where Trump just goes and does random odd jobs. You know, that was fantastic. And then he's, you know, and then the Kamala Harris campaign is releasing these angry statements, you know, oh, Trump, he's going to ruin the, you know, blue collar middle class. And yet he's pretending to work at this McDonald's. And it's like, what happened to the joy? Where is the joy? But yeah, I mean, you can just look at the polls and the betting odds, and I don't know what's going to happen in the election. You know, you never know with mail-in vote and expanded voting that a lot of people in January 6th were upset about. You just don't know where things are going to go anymore in these elections and how worthwhile these polls are anymore. But it doesn't look great for Kamala. It doesn't seem like that message is really resonating with voters, whether Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, vibes aren't so great right now. Last one for you, Kyle. In the movie, you have a bit of a tribute song called a Dirge for Democracy, I believe it's called. Mm. And yes. You mentioned that it's available on Spotify. I checked. It actually is available on Spotify. It is a fitting tribute. And as I was listening to it, I thought this is absolutely the most fun they had making this, was this song that they just put on Spotify that they weren't sure if anyone would ever go listen to.
Well, I'm glad one person went and listened to it. And yes, it says in the movie, like, available on Spotify. And it's just a quick gag. And my director of photography, Brandon, is this insane, multi-talented guy. And he records all kinds of music and does all that kind of stuff. And I just mentioned this as a one-off joke. And he's like, oh, I'm actually going to record it. Like, we're actually going to do it. And the next day we had this full track and it's on Spotify and people can go listen to it. And it's one of our Babylon Bee songs on Spotify. Hilarious. I love stuff like that when there's like this multi-layered reality. Like, where does the film's reality even end? The song exists.
It's out there. You could do it. You could blast it on your way home tonight. Kyle Mann, editor-in-chief of the Babylon Bee. Be sure to check out the movie. It's January 6th, The Most Deadliest Day. It's available now to Babylon Bee subscribers. Kyle, I appreciate it. It's a great movie, and thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Anytime in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard. And this is especially true when you're trying to buy or sell a home. I have relatives that are moving across the country right now. And it's like, it's a tough process. You know, just leaving this place you've been for a long time. All your stuff's getting shuffled around. You may be selling some of it. You're going to a totally new area. You're going to a new place to live. I mean, you know, the familiarity of home is something that you cherish for your whole life. And when it changes, there's a lot of, upheaval in your life. You don't need a real estate agent that's going to make things worse. You want someone who's going to make it easy, that's going to make all the nonsense on the side just go away. You want the person who's going to get you the best price on both sides of the transaction, somebody who's going to know certainly how to do all the paperwork, but also knows the market and everything else. We're talking about the top-selling real estate agents in your area. That's what you need, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you, so take advantage of it. They're going to screen the agents, get you the best one. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
Well, the PulseCast is, of course, a summary of data experts and election models and polling averages and prediction markets like Kalshi. And we have a percentage of what the chances are for a presidential candidate to win the election. And Donald Trump is at the highest he's been in a very long time, 52.56% chance to win. He is now the very, very slight favorite, though I would still call this race basically a toss-up. But this is as high as he has been since basically the days of the fade after Joe Biden and the rise of Kamala Harris as an actual candidate. Now, Trump is holding an edge now with Arab Americans in a poll. This is a shock if this actually holds. Now, of course, you know, the Arab Americans famously maybe not so super pro-Israeli. So that the criticism of the left, where they normally would vote, has been generally speaking around that issue. However, of course, Donald Trump is actually likes Israel as opposed to Joe Biden, who just fakes it. So I don't know why that would necessarily move them, but they seem to be moving away from the Democratic Party. Harris leads Trump by 20 points with younger Americans. This is basically in line with the Biden situation. We'd seen some progress in this for Trump earlier in the campaign, where he was only trailing by 12 back in July. However, that seems to have faded. And this is one of the things we've talked about over and over again during this campaign. These gains that Trump is making among non-traditional, let's say, Republican groups are great, but they're not always reliable. A lot of them wind up coming home to the party they've always voted for, and younger voters usually fall into that category. Kamala Harris is going to rally here in Texas, actually down in Houston, days before the election day. This is an interesting move, largely because it's essentially in support of Colin Allred. This is the really terrible Senate candidate going up against Ted Cruz in the state. It's a pretty close election. What's interesting about it, though, is Allred has done basically everything he can to run away from the fact that he's even a Democrat. Like, all he's doing is trying to hide who he actually is. To unite with Kamala Harris a few days before the election is a very strange move, especially they're going to do a rally about abortion. So I don't know why they're doing that, but apparently that's what they're going to do. And finally, Cook, one of the political outfits, also part of the PulseCast, by the way, shifts Pennsylvania Senate to a toss-up and Nebraska to lean Republican. These are two races important. First of all, McCormick in Pennsylvania. Very good news. This is only a toss-up race. We're seeing polling very, very close in that state now. Bad news, though, in Nebraska, where that is now seen as only a lean Republican race. This was a likely Republican a while ago. I kept saying this is a toss-up. It's a toss-up. It's been a toss-up on my board the whole time. Everyone seemingly is moving that more and more into the toss-up. We still don't have any really nonpartisan polling, so there's still a lot to learn about that race. But we'll give you more information if we ever get any of it. If you're planning in your retirement to do a John Galt situation and sort of just disappear forever, and you're going to need some money to do that. And let me give you somebody who's going to help you build your wealth with a constitutional perspective. It's called Constitution Wealth Management. They help you reduce the grip of ESG and DEI and CRT. All this stuff, all those companies we were featuring in the first segment of today's show, those companies still exist. Do you want to be involved with them? Do you want to be in business with a company that hates your guts? I doubt it. You can remove your exposure from a lot of these companies, and you can still get really good returns. And that's important. Look, we all need our investments to grow. And it's just a question of, do you have to invest in all these companies that despise your values, that mock you as soon as you turn around? No, you don't have to do that. You can get great returns as long as you have somebody who knows what they're doing, and your investments are some of the most powerful weapons you have to fight in the culture war. That's what the parallel economy is all about. Constitution Wealth, you can partner with them. You can understand and share your viewpoints with them. They can help you share the, kind of reflect your values within your investments. And remember, this isn't like buying a six-pack at the local store. It's about more than that. This is a lot of money, probably in your retirement. You got to make sure it's going to the right places. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Sign up for a free consultation today. It's ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Democrats continue their efforts to blame everybody else for inflation except themselves. They're now blaming McDonald's for the price hikes. I wonder why they're targeting McDonald's this week. It's shocking, I know. What's interesting about this, by the way, is a lot of this, like this idea, I think McDonald's is a great value. And I think, for example, I was there the other day with my kid. Buy one breakfast sandwich, get one for $1. You got to go in the app to get that. It's not necessarily on the menu. You get that little deal. And the first sandwich was $3.99. So you're getting two sandwiches made for you for $5. Seems completely reasonable to me. I don't understand all the complaints. We love you, McDonald's. I'm loving it.